The morning after Tommy Doon tried to give me volts, I woke up and took my pills like I always do. Every day I take Risperdal to make me calm, Lipitor to make me healthy, Paxil to make me happy, Lunesta at night to make me sleep, fish oil to soften my stool, and a baby aspirin for my heart. They come in a bubble-packed roll, neatly arranged. The roll has the time and date marked on it in sections, so I know just to where to tear off the special piece containing all the meds for that part of the day. The pills keep me always a little bit tired, but it's important that I take them, because if not, they might call a Dr. Strong. Paging Dr. Strong, they say over the PA system when a villager is about to throw a tantrum and needs to be restrained by staff. Dr. Strong, I'm a double, they say. I filled a big glass with warm water and took the pills in a single swallow. Then, because it was a Sunday morning and I had a period of extended free time ahead of me, I sat and did what I've been doing for several days now. I thought about the stick, stock, stalk, stork. The stick was a pointed stick that belonged to Mr. Derizowitz, the custodian at Peyton. He used it to spear through paper lying on the paths and grass. As I worked alongside him on lawn crew on certain afternoons, I was sure that if I had the stick and didn't have to interrupt my walking to bend down, but could simply whisk stuff off the ground and into a bag I had on my shoulder just like him, I'd be a person already on his way out of Peyton and maybe one day live alone and even drive a car. So I studied this stick that was a pure pull with a point on it. Later the same afternoon, when free time was over and everyone was supposed to attend a talent show in the main hall, I walked across the empty campus to the woodworking workshop. There I found an old broomstick in a pile of wood. I used the special jigsaw with the skinny blade and the high humped back like a man praying, and I cut the end off. Then I sawed the flat head of a nail off too, but quietly, and I gently hammered the nail into the stick and then filed the nail sharp again where it was flat from being hammered. This was a beautiful trash spearing machine, and I was happy at myself, and I whistled as I cleaned up. When I was done, I put the stick behind some bushes outside and went on to the talent show. Except it turned out that it wasn't a talent show, but a sing-along. A sing-along is held usually in the main hall whenever we want to greet new staff. The problem was that when I entered the main hall that evening and I saw who the new staff was, I immediately felt sick. He was seated at the center of a crowd of people in the main hall, and they had just started the welcome song. It's done to the tune of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, and it goes like this. Peyton Living flies on high, touch the earth and touch the sky, walking tall and feeling joy in the hearts of girls and boys. And today we welcome a new staff who will help us out to laugh. Then everyone applauds, cheering like it's the best, funniest thing they've ever heard. But usually during these songs, I'm only mouthing the words because my mind is focused instead on the soda machine in the nearby alcove that is filled with clustering cool cans of Mountain Dew and Sprite and root beer. Sometimes after events, Ray Keane will let me have one. The new staff stood up. He had hair that was long in the back and short in the front. He had a mustache that drooped on either side like a picture of a Civil War general in a magazine. He waited until the singing was done, and then he said, this is the part where I talk a little, right? Okay, name is Mike Hinton. I'm from right down the road in Gatesboro. Short version's high school, and then what you call a non-starter phase, community college. Next up, we got military service, which was 2 years in Iraq, 21st Cavalry, 2nd Battalion. Hardest thing I've ever done in this life, and maybe the next one too, and pulled a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star doing it. Anyway, after my service was over and I come back home, thinking I'm done with that, I'm like, okay, Lord, where do I go from here? People were nodding. So I began taking special ed classes, Mike said, which opened my eyes. Yes, sir, it did. But pretty soon I got to feeling like I wanted to actually be doing something in the world rather than reading about in a book. Friends, I wanted to be getting my feet wet and my hands dirty. he looked around and made a slow chewing motion like he was eating a piece of seriousness. Bottom line, he said, it's really important for me to be here in this community of beautiful people making a difference. And thank you for your faith in hiring me. He smiled. Ta-da, the end. People applauded as Mike Hinton looked slowly around the room, trying to fork his eyes individually into the faces of people in the crowd. But when he got to me, instantly the bad feeling deepened in my gut, like on the roller coaster when it shoots upward so fast it leaves your stomach still hanging at the bottom. Underneath his mustache, he was wearing my father's same yellow teeth and eyes, and I started whimpering, unable to stop the bad remembering. My dad was dead, but he was back again as a speaking person looking out of someone else's face. My whimpering grew louder and soon became an uncontrollable bawling in my mouth. Several of the staff started moving towards me, but the face of Mike Hinton was shining at me like from a circle of light in the middle of the room. He looked like he knew exactly what I was thinking, and he was angry about it. He looked like I'd just kicked dirt onto the white cake of his life. Ray Keane took me gently by the arm and out of the room and led me back to my cottage. Todd, shush now, she said. You know how you get with new men's staff and how you were with Roy and LeBron? But you're going to love Mike, honey. You really are. I've talked to him, and the man is one of the good guys, just like you. She made me brush my teeth and wash my face while she stood in the door of the bathroom of my house watching. Afterwards, she came close and bent over me, and the warmth of the air around her body went into me in a calming way as she hugged me good night. I got into bed and turned on the radio. The stripe of numbers glowed. Unchained Melody by the Righteous Brothers was playing. I can remember every song I've ever heard. I can remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when I first heard it. Mama was a piano teacher, and I'd spent a million hours sitting listening as she moved her hands over the keyboard and notes flew into the air and then gradually filled me up. Good night, sugar, Ray Keane said softly and shut the door. Everybody thinks they know what's wrong with me, but they don't. They think I'm autistic, but they don't exactly know what that means either. A doctor named Eugene Bleuler made up the word autism in 1911, though it didn't get used on anybody until a long time later. The last name of Bleuler sounds like it might belong to a fat man who's bursting out of his clothes with a pop. But actually, he was a Swiss doctor with a mustache who was good with words because he also made up the one schizophrenia. After Eugene Bleuler, no one thought about autism for a while because of being distracted by world wars. But then starting in the 1940s, one person after another began explaining that they knew what autism was and you should let them tell you. Not only do I sometimes read the paper, I also read the Encyclopedia Britannica too. No one knows that either, even though I have it under my bed. My mama first brought me the encyclopedia when I was 12 years old. I had just arrived at Clova Center, and she asked the director there to, quote, make a special exception. And he said yes, and so have all the other directors since. She used to bring me the Britannica yearbooks each year, too, until she died, Mama. Most people think the encyclopedia is there to make me happy like a piece of blanket from childhood, but I actually read it lots because the encyclopedia has a voice that belongs to a man sitting in a room at a table who wants to calmly talk about every single thing in the world, and it calms me to hear that. It calms me how he never gets angry or sick or makes the dog growl in his chest. It calms me that he only waits patiently for you to turn to the page so he can start talking again. I told Ray Keane about him, and she laughed and said she was going to call the Britannica Mr. B. Now, whenever I ask her a question she doesn't know the answer to, she says, why don't you ask Mr. B? When I asked him, Mr. B said that the explaining about autism has gone on for a while and continued till today, and still no one knows exactly what it is. He said this is true even though scientists are always having all sorts of what he calls groundbreaking discoveries about autism. He says they're doing a lot of tying of autism to things in the environment when they're not doing groundbreaking. Meanwhile, there are the skulls. I like thinking about the skulls. They're kept in museums in places like Germany and France, and they're shiny because they've been painted with varnish by museum people to keep them from rotting in air, which is called oxidation. The skulls are from a period of long ago known as the Neolithic. Mr. B says that this was when groups of people first began having fun together 8,000 years ago. He says they played string instruments, baked bread, and kept pets. He says they did things with their hair to look good for each other. The skulls have little holes cut in them. These holes are often square. Sometimes the cuts are perfect, like the lines of a tic-tac-toe. They were probably made with a curved knife. Also, the holes have bone growth around them, which means the surgery was done on people who were still alive. The question is why? Why'd they do it? Who was the first person who said, "I know, I'll feel better when I cut a hole in my head"? No one knows the answer for sure, but Mr. B says that it's probably the first example ever in the whole world of someone being operated on by someone else to let the crazy out.